This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
I had a poem that our lovely Shuso just sent me that I would like to read. It's from the poetess Karen Mazin Miller, and it's called Who turns into that? Sound into noise, aroma into odor, taste into pleasure or disgust. Who turns yes into no, grace into unkindness? Who turns the present into the past? Who turns the now into the not now? As it is into as it should be, silence into boredom, stillness into restlessness, the ordinary into the menial. Who turns pain into suffering, change into loss, grief into woe, woe into the story of your life? Who turns stuff into sentiment, desire into craving, acceptance into aversion, peace into war, us into them? Who turns life into labor, time into toil, enough into not enough? Who turns why into why not? Who turns delusion into enlightenment? Who thinks, who feels, who senses, who turns? All practice is the practice of making a turn in a different direction. Pamela sent that. And I guess I'll read the little poem I want to read to you. It's from Robert Creeley. It's called Love Comes Gently. And I've been feeling that, thinking about speaking with you all. Love comes quietly. Start over. Love comes quietly. Finally drops about me, on me, in the old ways. What did I know, thinking myself alone all the way? That I found on poets.org or poets.org, which I subscribe to. And if you go to poets.org, you can type in a poet that you would like to see, but this one popped up, which is so great. Okay, then. Maybe we could introduce ourselves, even though we can't see everyone.
Judy.
Michael.
Ben.
Chuck.
Todd.
Catherine.
Miguel.
Larry, who could use a little more volume.
Okay. Yeah.
Jerome.
Some of you are muted.
Leanne.
Charles.
Captain.
Yeah.
Amanda.
Laura.
Yeah.
Peter.
John.
John.
Randy.
Hi, Randy.
Jackie.
Oh, hi, Jackie.
Laura.
Hello, Laura. Okay, Peter, I'm introducing you.
Hi, Paula. Hi, Galen.
Yeah, he's over there lying on the couch listening. Peter said hi.
Well,
hi.
Were you inviting me to go ahead, Laura or Paula?
Sure.
I guess. I've got to switch screens.
Okay. Yeah, this is the new computer, and I keep thinking I should turn it up a little more. I guess I should here. I can't hear you as well. Okay.
The poem that came into my life this week, titled Black Oaks by Mary Oliver. I read quite a bit of her decades ago, and probably this was one of them, but it came into my life with a poetry group that Marie and I belong to from Peace Church here in Santa Cruz. And so I'll read it and then make a few comments. Black Oaks by Mary Oliver. Okay, not one could write a symphony or a dictionary or even a letter to an old friend full of remembrance and comfort. Not one can manage a single sound, though the blue jays carp and whistle all day in the branches without the push of wind. But to tell the truth, after a while, I'm pale with longing for their thick bodies ruckled with lichen. And you can't keep me from the woods, from the tonnage of their shoulders and their shining green hair. Today is a day like any other, 24 hours, a little sunshine, a little rain. Listen, says Ambition, nervously shifting her weight from one boot to another. Why don't you get going? For there I am, in the mossy shadows under the trees. And to tell the truth, I don't want to let go of the risks of idleness. I don't want to sell my life for money. I don't even want to come in and out of the rain.
Wow. I never heard that one before. It's lovely.
But we at Jokoji, of course, are surrounded by trees. And so fitting a poem for Jokoji setting for a number of reasons, but the one that jumped out, resonated with me most when I read this in the past week was because I think in a sense, Mary Oliver is having a conversation with trees. And that title, The Attentive Heart, Conversation with Trees,
perfect.
Those of you who have been around long enough, like Paula and I, remember the incredible friend and author and Dharma sister who wrote this book decades ago, Stephanie Kaza. And you know, the particular, I reread her introduction after encountering Mary Oliver's poem, and I should read it every month. It's so right on for all of us. But you know, she makes the connection, of course. She acknowledges in her acknowledgments that the first one is to Coben as her teacher. And in one of the first chapters, she writes about the alder trees down at the edge of the pond. She wrote this decades ago. Those were young alders recently planted. There were five of them, I believe. They're still there. When I go up and get close to the pond, I can see them. They're across the pond, down by the other bridge. And I remember contributing a copy of the book for Jokoji's library, and hopefully it's still there in the natural history section. So I'd encourage you, those of you who are at Jokoji now or when you go there next, take a look for The Attentive Heart, Conversation with Trees by Dharma sister Stephanie Kaza, who I haven't heard from for years, but and maybe Angie's in touch with her, or maybe you are, Paula.
No.
But she's been a professor of ecology, particularly the ethics of ecology in the at the University of Vermont for decades after graduating from UCSC and spending a lot of time around Jikoji. And I think the Berkeley Theological Seminary, she got a ministry of Buddhism or something, some similar religious studies there. So I'll leave you with that, with Black Oaks by Mary Oliver and with Stephanie Kaza. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wrote that down. I can't see it very well, but there. Thank you.
I'll read a couple of short poems from the session, the meditation retreat we had this last week.
Great.
When hammer hit Han, a newborn opens its eyes. What's its first thought? A row of empty bowls, cooking emptiness, just enough. After a day of sitting, two pieces of toast with lots of butter. A candle flickers. The self is right here. The one true self is right here. Light casts a shadow.
Well, thank you. I see Kaz and a few others are doing a haiku workshop again at Paya. I tried to sign on, but they don't recognize me anymore. But anyway, it's coming right up. And we'll hear more of these from you, right, Jero, as we go along?
Yes.
Okay. It might help if you move closer to the mic. I could hear you though. I don't know if I can really see everybody on this screen, but who wants to read? Andy.
I'll go ahead.
Good.
Okay, this is a Kenneth Rexroth poem. A pattern my older for years. And it's called Making Love, Killing Time. The clock within us speaking time by heartbeat seconds and by mental years is garrulous in any gear. So life at once seems short and endless. Who is not glad to find the hour later than he thought? For he has killed not time, but the inward timing of the ceaseless rote, its beat, which makes him count the cost of that creation which, loving, he cannot resist. Hurries him on to end whatever was begun, the child to be grown, the poem to be done. But in each other's arms are on the tide of prayer, when we encountering souls support each other like swimmers in a blissful sea. The cost is known as the cause of bliss, and the gabbling rote is heard as a murmur of peace. So making love, we say, but love makes us again to be as in our listening time. When hearing our heartbeat, we took it for the world's, with no wish to escape it, then and there, loved what we were. That's it.
That's really it. That's, wow.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with a lot of his poems, but that one grabbed me years ago, and I keep going. I have a series of poems I keep going back to.
Mm-hmm.
and so.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Can you repeat the author of that poem? Andy, can you repeat the author of that poem?
Yeah, Kenneth Rexroth. He was, I don't know, they called him what, the father of the Beat Generation in San Francisco. And I think he also did some translation of Chinese poetry.
Yes.
Long time ago. So he's pretty, I'm sure he's not around now, but he was quite the figure in probably the 50s and 60s. Yeah, Kenneth Rexroth, Rexroth.
Yeah. Thank
you. Maybe sometime when we have it together. It won't be me that has it together. We could get a playlist of the ones people read, but that probably makes it way, way unsimple.
Oh, Laura. Laura's holding her hand up.
Hi, Laura. Want to read?
Yes. Sorry, I was muted. So this is a poem by Adrian Rich, who's a local Santa Cruz author, one of my favorite poets. And it's a poem called Integrity. A wild patience has taken me this far. As if I had to bring to shore a boat with spasmodic outboard motor, old sweaters, nets, spray mottled books tossed in the prow, some kind of sun burning my shoulder blades, splashing the oarlocks, burning through. Your forearms can get scalded, licked with pain in a sun blotted like unspoken anger behind a casual mist. The length of daylight this far north in this 45th year of my life is critical. The light is critical of me, of this long dreamed involuntary landing on the arm of an island sea. The glitter of the shoal pleading into shadow, I recognize. The stand of pines, violet black really, green in the old postcard, but really I have nothing but myself to go by. Nothing stands in the realm of pure necessity except what my hands can hold. Nothing but myself, myself, after so long this answer. As if I have always known, I steer the boat in simply, the motor dying on the pebbles, cicadas taking up the rhythm dropped in silence. Anger and tenderness, myself, and now I believe they breathe in me as angels, not polarities. Anger and tenderness, the spider's genius to spin and weave in the same action from her own body, anywhere, even from a broken web.
Anybody back in the sitting in the Zendo there that has something to read still?
Yes, we have one here. One here.
Good.
I have one. I will try. A Jesuit Catholic priest, Jared Manning, in his 19th century in England, just had a very depressed life and all. And this is one that he wrote, which I hope I can share with you. The world is charged with the grandeur of God. It came out like shining from shook foil. It gathers to a greatness like the ooze of oil crushed. Why do men then now not wreck his rod? Generations have trod, and all is seared with trade and bleared, smeared with toil. And where is man's smudge and share is man's smell? The soil is bare now, nor can foot feel being shod. And for all this, nature is never spent. There lives the dearest freshness deep down things. And though the last lights off the black west went, all morning at the brown brink eastward springs, because the Holy Ghost over the bent world broods with warm breast and with bright wings.
That always brings tears to my eyes. I'm so glad you read that. Thank you. Such a lovely poem. And what's her name? Because I couldn't hear.
Larry.
Larry. Hi. Thank you. Are you going to unmute, Peter, or are you talking to someone else right now?
Yeah, I think he's talking to someone else.
Okay.
I could read something. So I could read another Mary Oliver poem, which is always nice. I could read either one that's all statements or one that's all questions. Which one would you like, Laura? Not Laura, sorry, Paula.
Questions.
Questions. The summer day. The other one was going to be wild geese.
I also love that one.
Wild geese is all statements, and I just noticed it right now that it's all statements. And I know why, actually. But and then the summer day is all questions, pretty much. I know these are like her two most famous poems, but that's because they're great. I'll try and read the summer day without crying. The summer day. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?
Wow.
Thanks.
It's such a treat to be able to hear those poems rather than just read them. I've never heard her read. I read it beautifully. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Peter, are you going to read something? No? Yes. No, he says no. Okay.
I got a little one.
John, do you want to read one?
Yes.
Good.
This is from John Cage, noted poet and author, composer. And this is the closing page of a poem called Talk on Nothing. I am getting nowhere slowly as the talk goes on. Slowly, we have the feeling we are getting nowhere. That is a pleasure which will continue. If we are irritated, it is not a pleasure. Nothing is not a pleasure if one is irritated. But suddenly it is a pleasure and then more and more, it is not irritating. Originally, we were nowhere. And now again, we are having the pleasure of being slowly nowhere. If anybody is sleepy, let him go to sleep.
I didn't quite, I wasn't sure of the last name. Did you say John Cage?
Yes, John Cage. The poem is nice. Called Talk on Nothing.
Good, perfect.
And that's included in a book by David Hinton. The book is called Poetry of the Wilds.
Thank you.
Paula, Larry has a short poem.
Okay, Larry. Thanks, Tom.
Peter Mullen. The world would be better off if everybody tried to be better. And there would be better if everybody stopped trying to be better off. Because when everybody tries to be better off, nobody is better off. When everybody tries to be better, everybody would be better off. And nobody would be poor if everybody tried to be poorest. And everybody would be rich if nobody tried to be richer. And everybody would be what everybody ought to be if everybody tried to be what everybody wants everybody else to be.
I like the train of thought going here. Pretty soon we'll be nothing, back to nothing. So two people haven't raised their hands because they just want to listen, but I'd like to invite them anyway, Renee and Susan. Okay. Would you want to hear a short little poems I wrote when Coben died? I've never read them before to anybody in the Zen community. And I made copies, but then my friend would sort of had a little launching and most of my copies got taken up. So I just have like one left. Find it. If I can find what. I can't find it. Yeah, I can't find it. I just have all my friends' books. I have mine somewhere, but shoot, I missed my chance. It's called How It Is Here. I'll read it sometime. Next time. Yes, Laura.
If there's no one else who's going to speak, I found another piece of prose, I guess, more than a poetry, but it's Edward Lee Masters from Spoon River Anthology. And I don't know how many of you know that or not. It's an older play. And it's, for those of you that don't know Spoon River, it's about these characters that are the dead on the hillside of Spoon River, and it's the dead speaking of their lives and how their interactions with other characters and just perceptions about what their life was. So this is Fiddler Jones. The earth keeps some vibration going there in your heart, and that is you. And if the people find you can fiddle, why fiddle you must for all your life. How could I till my 40 acres, not to speak of getting more, with a medley of horns, bassoons, and piccolos stirring in my brain by crows and robins, and the creak of the windmill, only these. And I never started to plow in my life that did not, that, and I never started to plow in my life that someone did not stop in the road and take me away to a dance or a picnic. I ended up with 40 acres. I ended up with a broken fiddle and a broken laugh and 1,000 memories and not a single regret.
Wow. I can't hear whoever's speaking right now.
Todd.
It's Todd. Laura, Todd has a question for you.
Sure.
Yeah. So, Laura, you called that prose. You called that prose. So,
yes.
You need to be educated here. So how is prose, how is that prose, and how does it, relationship or not to poetry? How is poetry different and prose different than poetry?
I guess I would say that to me, my understanding of it is the definition is primarily that frequently poetry has certain rules of, you know, iambic pentameter, or it's got a rules of, you know, there's a symmetry with either syllables or rhyming and cadence, whereas prose is just more textual. It doesn't adhere to those rules. It's more, I don't know if reflective is a proper term or not, but it's not as bound by the context that I think poetry, at least in the past, has been. And that may be a very imperfect definition. So I would defer to Paula for a better definition between the two, if one exists even.
That was pretty good. I don't think I could have come up with all those technical terms. I used to teach poetry a lot, but there are prose poems and there are poems that aren't prose. That don't necessarily rhyme, but they're certainly paying attention. It's the music, the musical quality of it, I think, too, in poems. And certainly some people write some fantastic prose as well. So it's difficult to just probably explore that, you know, look up some poems that are prose poems and look up some poems possibly by the same poet that are not prose poems. Just fun, you know.
It is. I think that was one of the things that Walt Whitman did, you know, that was sort of one of the departures he made from traditional poetry, was more of a breaking the rules, you know, not being held to those boundaries, you know.
Right. Hey, I found that book if we have time to hear it. I'll show it to you. I don't know if you can really see it. It says how it is here, only probably backwards to you. I don't know. That was, you know, that was like a devastating blow. I was in this room here, and I was standing up and I sort of fell down onto the couch when I got that letter. My Coven had died. So it's, you know, they're cathartic, and these are mostly from dreams. I think there are dreams that include my mother and father too, but they're all these sort of love poems, I guess. It starts with a quote, because I just remember Coben talking about Tozon, and this is just the quote from that, from a talk of Coben. Tozon asked his master, when another person comes to me after your death and asked, what was he? What was his truth? What shall I say? These really wander all around, but they're not totally realistic. Am I speaking to you, or am I dreaming in my own house? The dogs are old and easily led back to the gate, or unclaimed in a waiting shuttle place. Let me sit in the hall and feel how it is here. Your eyes are as dark as stones at the bottom of the river. Lucky has teardrop markings on either side of her face. Her fur smoothed flat. I like to smooth it flat. Not knowing how it happens. A body, a mother, not knowing how. Silk cocoon in a shoebox of mulberry leaves. Or a woman whose face, chin, nose, cheeks smells like night. No search for a self, though circumstance gets louder. Green tea, a cup with no handle, small drawer pulled open to the what inside. These are all separate pages, you can tell, right? Something urgent I explained to others and myself, then trying to go on, a loopy arrow. I think it was here where we are right now, head banging on sand, thunder in my fist. We laughed together, exchange flashed through me. You hand me a cup of tea. I feel like a camera on a jet recording its own flames. Looking back at you in each object's form, one may dwell on two things, however, and sense of beauty and all my fate more. So hold or let me lie beside who thought I'd know before the fire and the cold flashed sidelong eyes, nursery songs on their rain phone. Butterfly there, like instead of the fly in Suzuki Hiroshi's book. If entering the butterfly house, you hold out watermelon, sleeves tied back, let the butterflies sip. Who wanted the beautiful, unexpected, wanted that. That's it. Thank you for letting me read it.
One more little tiny one.
Okay, Larry has another tiny one.
I praised you in the morning.
Okay.
And didn't know it.
Good.
Slept with you at night and didn't know it. I thought I was myself, but I was you and didn't know it.
I would like to hear that again, only louder. Maybe closer to the mic.
Okay. I praised you in the morning and didn't know it. I slept with you at night and didn't know it. I thought I was myself, but I was you and didn't know it.
That's perfect. Thank you.
What happened?
She's frozen. Laura? Hello? Oh, I thought you were wanting to say something.
No.
Okay.
Michael?
I'd like to hear what's still bothering those. Yeah. Jerome has.
Do you have more haiku, Jiro?
I have some more, yeah.
Jiro has some more haiku.
Okay.
Cold silver moon drops, the morning light awakens, the bud springing out. Yellow bamboo snail is still, but it is moving. Winter sun gives its all, then leaves without a word, satisfied once more. Winter, spring on the verge, black ground, golden with acacia. Space where Angie sat, all falls apart. Sun's Coban. Float, Zendo, float on. After thinking, the third strike of the bell, a bit off. That's it.
Jackie, will you read your other Mary Oliver Wild Geese?
Thanks, Jiro.
And you'll find it. Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. I read Mary Oliver's book on writing poetry. It was either that book or it was when she was on the program on being, which I highly recommend you find. And I think she might read poetry on that podcast of the On Being program. But she said that she wrote this poem as an exercise in, and this is for Todd, this is technicality about poems, end stopped lines. So an end stopped line is one that falls. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees. Whereas there's other lines that flow, like the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes. That's, you know, rain are moving, that's two lines, but they're not end stopped lines. So this was just an exercise for a poetry class. And it turned, she just did it. And it's one of the most wonderful poems. So I just like that story.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.